Uploading. Tsunami Black Hole Megamix 2K3, now.
The fate of the whole world is in my hands.
You foolish man. I am a Jito Ryo master. Allow me to reunite you with your ancestors.
Generation, and welcome to another episode of Tom's Prerogative, right here on the Absolution Network. I am, of course, your primetime host, Thomas Prontometis, and I welcome you back to a brand new episode of Tom's Prerogative after over 4 weeks vacation. Yeah, I'm going to completely ignore that I had 3 separate podcasts released during those 4 weeks about conventions and stuff, along with all the photo albums I've been releasing. I'm just going to completely ignore it. No, in serious mode, yes, I know I've had that stuff out, but, you know, we haven't had a Tom's Prerogative out during that time. We had a lot of convention stuff to cover because, you know, again, Wizard World, and Anime Next. And, of course, in between that was E3, which was, I hate calling it safe, but really safe is probably the best word. I hate it because, you know, Sony came out with such great stuff, and everything else was lackluster, so, you know, kind of took away from how special it was. I wish it would have been a better year, and the competition had done a better job, because I think that would have made what Sony did much, much more important, look that much more good. but yes, I'm finally back, and you know what? Usually I can make a joke here. I'm just going to completely come out with it. This is a re-recording, because the first recording of this episode was absolutely crap. So, yes, we are re-recording this, and hopefully this will be... I know this will be a better episode than... what I probably recorded, because I recorded the other episode as I just woke up, which is always what you want to hear, but you don't want to hear about that. What are we covering today? Well, now that I've gone through that long-winded response of what I'm recording, today we are covering Demon King Daimyo, and I would like to take a Japanese name, but I'm not even going to try to pronounce it. It's Ichinon Don... I tell you, I'm not going to try to pronounce it, and then I try to pronounce it. It has a different name in Japanese, but this is the English name. An anime that is licensed by Section 23/ADV, and I'm sure if you're an anime fan, you completely know the story, and if you don't, look it up. It long story, we're not getting into it now. But yeah, done by Section 23, English dubcast. They got the band back together, which I'll explain in a moment. But yeah, this came out during 2010. Again, another anime that came out during that wonderful year that has really set the pace for these past 3 years so far. And when I say past 3 years, I'm talking 2010, 2011, and this year of 2012. So, this is a romantic harem anime. I also jokingly call this Atheism, the anime. Being with the sort of underlying theme of atheism and sort of anti-religion. With that being said, I'm going to give this fair warning out right now. If you are a person who cannot handle conversations about anti-religion and atheism and sort of the bashing of religion, as there are those of you out there, but if you're one of those who can't deal with that, you might not want to listen to this episode. I don't know what I'm going to say. I mean, I know what I'm going to say. I have notes on what I'm going to say, but I don't know everything I'm going to say or what rants I might go on or whatever. So, to be careful here, I'm just saying, if you can't handle that stuff, you might not want to listen to this episode. Capiche? I'll give fair warning when I get to the part where we talk about that stuff again. So for those who want to listen to the rest of the stuff, so on, you know what's probably going to happen. I'm probably going to say something that's going to offend everybody. But on to... This is a long way to go, especially when we have no emails or comments to talk about. But let's get on to our review, shall we? And first, of course, we have synopsis and cast. And let's go over cast first. We have Chris Patton as Akuto Sai, Lucy Christian as Junko Hitari, Melissa Davis as Kenga Soga, Maggie Flecno as Corona, Greg Ayers, the legendary Greg Ayers, as Hiroshi Miwa, which means Chris Patton, Lucy Christian, Greg Ayers, they got the band back together! Shelley Colleen Black as Fujiko Eto, Rosie Curtis as Michiko Tori, Hilary Hagg as Lily Shiraishi, Stephanie Whittles as Etiko Toria, and Leonardo Alzudura, and I completely screwed up that name, and I have not yet figured out how to frickin' pronounce that name, so I'm just going to move on, as Bunchiro Yamato. He's the villain, by the way. See, that's his revenge on me. He gave me a name I can't pronounce! But anyway, synopsis. Akuto Sai is a young man who going to this very high-class high school to become a high priest. He lives in a world where magic is the norm. But when a prediction machine tells him he is going to be the next Demon King, all hell breaks loose as people try to kill him. Some people are attracted to him just by the mere mention, the fact that he's supposed to be the Demon King. Even though he's not done absolutely anything evil whatsoever. So Akuto Sai tries his best to survive as he dangles people trying to kill him, people wanting to use him, and of course, all of his romantic interests who are hanging all over him. All this and more in Demon King Damno. So with that being said, let's get right into our review of Demon King Damno.
来てよ。待ってよ。待ってもしょうがないから、この枯れた抜き目ぐれ。あ、僕は、キス。走る感情。最高の偶然血は生きないかを。出たら、目ない日々。困ってるんだよ。欲求は無限大。
welcome back, and let's get right into a review. And as you know, we have our talking points, music, animation, yada, yada, yada. So let's get right into it. Like, I don't care, and I apologize, folks. I do care, but you know the drill by now. Let's start off with music. And we're going to start off by talking about Demon King's opening and closing theme. I love the opening theme here. I don't know why. I mean, it's sort of J-pop rock track. I know that, but they just have... I have a thing for any and all rock and roll. I guess I'm... Because I'm born to be wild. Da, 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 da. But, you know, I just love the melody here. I love the guitar in the background. This sort of rock track, I think it really makes the song. And it really gets you hyped up for the anime. And it really works in accomplishing that part of its goal. Again, it's an open theme. It wants to get you pumped up for the anime. So it accomplishes that very, very well. But, I mean, I just love this sort of guitar riffing at the beginning and everything. And I love the melody, and I just love the song in general. Then we have the closing theme, which is so vastly different. It's a just cheerful J-pop song, and I don't know what to make of it, to be honest. I mean, to me, it feels out of place. You know, it's cheerful, and it sort of, whereas the opening theme really sort of insinuates the action that will go on in the anime, and there's a lot of action, a fair number of action, considering this is a, you know, romantic comedy slash harem series, along with the sort of action that happens with it. But, and with the closing theme really does kind of cover that whole harem aspect of it, but I guess it just, it's such a change of pace from everything that happens on with the anime and that opening theme. I just don't think it works, personally. I think it's just too much of a change of pace and change of theming as well. That being said, I do like the song. It's a nice song. It's nothing special to me, but it's a nice song. And I do kind of like the animation. I like the animation, again, better with the opening theme. I just think that whole opening theme along with the animation, it gets you psyched up for the anime. Especially when you're seeing Akuto ride Peterhausen, which I didn't mention it in the synopsis because, you know, it wasn't important. But yeah, as a Demon King, they eventually find his, apparently his pet dragon, Peterhausen, who is voiced by the other Ace brother, Chris Ayers. I blanked on his first name for a second there. But yeah, so he pretty much rides Peterhausen into battle multiple times in the series. And the opening theme, they show him riding Peterhausen as he fights against a giant flying fortress. Just right there, that image should indicate to you how awesome this is. But yeah. But the closing theme, back to the closing theme. Yeah, it just feels too out of place to me. It's a good song, it's okay, and I do like the animation with it. It's funny, cutesy. I just think it doesn't fit with the anime, and I think that's its main problem. Theming-wise, it's too much of a change of pace. Then there's the overall score of the show. I want to say it's more Western store style, in the fact that it's more upfront and more, you hear the music more. They don't play it so loud that it feels like it's trying to cover up for stuff, but it does feel like this sort of more Western style where it's more noticeable. That being said, the tunes are just, you know, for that matter, variations on, you know, typical tunes you'd hear in a harem anime and stuff like that. I mean, there's some good tunes that are unique to this that I could pick out. You know, there's one that's sort of a variation on the opening theme that plays a lot. There's actually two different versions, a more softer version during more serious moments, and then a more upbeat, serious version that's used during sort of battle sequences. Then there's sort of Corona's type of sort of comical theme that, sticks out to me, but for the most part, most of it is sort of, you know, it fits the, you know, I'll say this. It always fits the what's going on screen. You know, for instance, there's a scene where Fujiko Edo is trying to control this, apparently, this hermaphrodite snail perverted demon thing. And it's it is kind of sort of classic, not the word, but that typical sort of joke, oink, oink, oink. Why the hell did I just say that? I have no idea, folks, but I'm keeping that in. I have no idea why I just oinked like a pig, but they did that yoke, yoke, oink. Oh, this is Yoki moment. Wait, 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 wait. By the way, they don't play that tune, but hopefully you get what I'm saying. It's like that typical sort of jokey music, you know, cheerful music during cheerful scenes, so on, so on. It's very standard, so, I mean, there are a couple of tunes that do stick out, but that's, again, two of them are mostly because they're sort of variations on that really, really good opening theme. I mean, overall, if I had to measure the music, I'd give it a C. I mean, very good opening theme. It's just, there's nothing special about it. There's nothing bad about it. There's just nothing special about it. I think it's used fine in the series. It doesn't overshadow or sort of overpower what's going on the screen. It works perfectly on doing what it needs to do, sort of theming the scenes. But again, it's also the fact that it really isn't anything special. With that, we are going to move on to animation. Let's talk about the overall style first of Demon King. And, you know, I do like the style. Again, one thing that really separates 2010 and onward with what was going on from 2005 to 2009 is from that period, 2005 to 2009, there really wasn't the sort of brightness. A lot of the colors were dampened and everything, and more of pastel of colors and stuff like that. Like, it was sort of a mellow coloring. And, you know, even in the animes that were bright and cheerful, the coloring seemed a bit more mellow. You know, but from 2010 onward, which this anime, of course, is part of, you know, those bright colors are allowed to shine and everything. You see it here, just with the different color hairs and how they're able to represent emotions and everything, and just very colorful, very bright and cheerful, which I think really helps to sort of provide a sort of comedic tone towards sort of the serious topic that they're talking about, which, again, this goes hand in hand. There is sort of a serious underlying theme, but that seriousness is not overpowering because of sort of the cheerful aspect through the coloring and everything that they provide for the series. So it works well to balance each other. You know, the colors, the bright colors and everything, and sort of the cheerful aspects that they do a lot of times, sort of jokes and comedy and everything, helps lighten the mood to enjoy the more serious underlying theme that this series is talking about. Let's move on to character designs. I love Akuto Sai's design. I love that he is a different sort of harem series character, you know, especially from, again, I'm sort of comparing these two eras here, but especially from 2005 to 2009, with the exceptions of a few characters here or there, like Negima and the main lead in Princess Lover, which is a great harem anime. I want to say it actually came out in 2009, maybe 2008. It was one of those rare, very good animes that came out of time that's never going to come to America, unfortunately. That's a story for another day. And maybe one day I actually might review it. But again, back on topic. Most harem leads were one of sort of two characters. They were sort of the Kanakamatsu type of, not Kanakamatsu, but the Kanakamatsu sort of Kentaro Oi character, glasses, loser, Ronin, yada yada yada. Or he was, sort of, Well, for the most part, it was that character. Or it was sort of the short, sort of midget. I sort of lost. I'm like, I forgot what the other type of thing the character was from over there. But, yeah, it was sort of a short midget character, like in Ori no Yoshi. Which, again, doesn't mean that those enemies were bad or good, but it was... There was this sort of common theme to how the characters were designed. We do see a difference in this era, and this is one of those differences. Here you had this very tall, very strong-willed character. You know, it provided a sort of different form of comedy in the sense to where, again, he wasn't somebody who was trying to cause trouble, but because everybody, because of what his future was supposedly predicted to be, everybody initially said, oh, he's there to cause trouble. And sort of that, you know, unfortunate circumstance, awkward moment comedy, which we'll get into later. But again, and that works because of his character design. He is a very strongly drawn character, which I like. I love sort of the pointy things under his eyes, and I love when he's using his mana. I love that they sort of, grow and get deeper, and they're, like, red inside of him. I love that, and they do give him a bit of a demonic look, and I love his sort of demonic appearance. I really, really enjoyed it. It's really something different and unique. Moving on to Junko Hatari, I love how they integrate certain sort of ninja aspects of her life into her normal outfit. You know, these sort of rope thong panties that she wears that they make a lot of jokes about. Wow, you notice his panties, Tommy. What a shock. Yeah, get over it. I mean, it's the type of panties that you'd see samurais wear and stuff like that. And that, the arm guards, and other things that would be part of her sort of ninja gear, one would say, since she comes from a ninja family. I love how they add those aspects to her normal appearance. Kenga Soga, is an okay design. It works for what it is. I love sort of the light redness of her hair to really indicate sort of that cheerfulness. But outside of that, she really is just she's the cheerful girl. You know, as opposed to Junko, which does seem unique, especially considering she's sort of the Tsunade, or at least she's the closest thing to the Tsunade character. Corona. I was about to say the lowly character of the harem, but she's not a lowly. She's a. I don't. They really don't actually say what her age is. But she's this. I don't know what she is. She's a Leiden or something like that. Some type of biomechanical, I guess, cyborg or android or something like that. She has a tail. And if you pull the tail, you deactivate her. Yeah, but it's an okay design. It's, you know, I think a better way to put it is she seems like the standard flat-chested girl with no emotion or personality. You know, not that she doesn't have personality, but her emotions, no matter what her personality is at the moment, when she's happy, sad, always seem blank. And she's always, fooling around with people. Futuko Eto, we have to have a busty girl in the harem. And she fits that role. But I love sort of the royal purple hair and everything about her design. And yes, this includes the fact that, she's busty, but also the royal purple of her hair and just how she moves and everything in the series indicates this sort of sensuality of the character and accentuates sort of the class of the character, you know, which really fits to what she is. You know, again, by mid-series, she wants to become, Akudo's demon bride. You know, and she's always trying to control demon beasts and everything. And so, but there is a sense to class and sort of sensuality to how she moves and what she does throughout the series. And it's definitely shown in her character design, which I like. Hiroshi Miwa, in human form, because he becomes a superhero called Brave in the series. But, you know, in his human form, sort of where he's sort of the sidekick for Akudo, you know, he... I love how they kind of do kind of make him like a little brother. You know, he seems like a little brother to Okudo. You know, they have this sort of like big brother, little brother relationship in the series. You know, Hiroshi constantly calls Okudo his big brother and everything. And, you know, in fact, considered himself kind of like a minion of the Demon King, as he calls himself throughout the series. So I like the fact that he is kind of like a little brother and kind of weak like that. As for his Brave outfit, which he gains halfway through the series, I love the color scheme. I like it. I like sort of the Super Sentai aspect of its design. I like the cape. You know, it's sort of this mixture of sort of Super Sentai with sort of American superhero. And I really do like that. Lily Shirashi, I love sort of the almost sort of witch aspect of that character. And she looks like a little witch. And I think that looks neat and interesting, considering especially the fact that her magic that she uses is one, where she has Mr. Fantastic's power and can stretch her arms. Well, maybe not Mr. Fantastic, but Stretch Armstrong, definitely, without a doubt, is something we can say about her. That's her power, Stretch Armstrong. She can stretch her arms to elastically. The last two main characters, I guess I can talk about, they're not main characters, they're supporting characters, but they are the villains. Eriko Toriya and Bunchiro Yamato both work well, their character designs. You know, Eriko has a sort of sliminess and a sleaziness to her. Especially considering she's always hanging, you know, when she's with Okudo, she's always hanging all over him. And there's a sleaziness and a sliminess, I guess, to her character design that you can see that immediately makes you not trust her. So I think that really helps in making her character work. Again, I'm talking about the sleaziness and the sliminess being in her character design. And then Bunchiro Yamato, he said, the way he's, you know, he always seems like the smooth bad guy. And if you've seen the smooth bad guy, you know, you've seen Bunchiro. You know, he seems like that smooth type of bad guy who doesn't say much for that matter. On to special effects. The special effects were good. They really didn't stand out. I mean, they're special effects. They were really well done. You know, especially during battles and the explosions, they didn't take away from the series. They looked fine. I mean, there's really nothing more to say about it than that. And then the backgrounds were enjoyable. They were standard as well. I mean, backgrounds and sort of special effects both were standard. They weren't bad. They just didn't stand out. That's all. So with that, we are going to take a break. I'm going to play a couple of promos for you. And when I come back, we're going to get into acting, and then we're going to get into story. So, here's our break, folks. We'll be right back.
The funeral is over. Jonathan Kent is on the mend.
So, how's Clark's father?
Oh, much, much better.
Lois has returned home.
Lois, over here!
Harry, wife? Since when did you start meeting your staff at the airport? How'd you know I was returning on that flight?
A good editor checks out his hunches, Lois. I got a hot story on Bunch One straight away. I'm parked over here.
But just as Metropolis has learned to live without the Man of Steel...
I know, there was only one Superman, but Metropolis just hit the jackpot. Because we got four Supermen now, and nobody knows which of them, if any, is the real McCoy.
Four beings of incredible power and intellect have laid claim to the Man of Steel's name.
The last son of Krypton.
I live.
The Man of Steel.
Man of Steel coming through! Nobody move! This is a bust!
The Cyborg.
Yes, I'm Superman. I'm back.
the Boy of Steel.
Put me down!
Listen, pal, don't ever call me Super Boy. Capiche?
The reign of the Supermen is upon us. And so, from crisis to crisis, a Superman podcast begins its epic coverage of this last act in the epic Death and Return of Superman saga. Every week, Michael Bailey and Jeffrey Taylor, along with the best and the brightest in the podcasting community, will cover this event in all of its forms, from the comics to the novelizations to the audio drama and beyond. Superman is back, but is any of them the real Man of Steel? Find out on From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast, located at www.supermanhomepage.com and www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
I guess you weren't so tough after all, were you? Now it's time to send you to the next dimension.
291 original episodes.
This can't be. It's still going up!
325 manga chapters.
You act innocent, but you're deadly.
Time to die!
Dozens of characters, hundreds of enemies, and a whole lot of violence.
That kind of violence is pointless!
You see, Super Saiyans tend to be a bit violent.
Oh, crap!
Join hosts Donovan and Jesse as they cover the arrival of the Saiyans, the journey to Namek, the battle with Frieza, the mystery of the androids, and the terror of Majin Buu.
I lied when I said you could go, at least partially lied, for I will let you go to another dimension.
The Next Dimension, a Dragon Ball Z podcast. Join the fight at dbznextdimension.libsyn.com.
In June of 1962, a superhero unlike any other made his first appearance in the pages of Amazing Fantasy number 15, the final issue of that series. 6 months later, this character would receive his own title, and from there he would grow in popularity and be adapted into several animated series, a handful of live-action series both in the US and abroad, have countless action figures made in his likeness, dominate the cinema screen, and much, much more. It is fair to say that the Amazing Spider-Man is a pop culture icon and a fictional character that people all over the world identify with and love. This year, Spider-Man is turning 50, and Views from the Long Box, an internet radio series hosted by me, Michael Bailey, is going to celebrate the wall crawler in a series of episodes focusing on various aspects of the character's existence. Together with such podcasting luminaries as Brad Douglas, Andrew Leyland, John Wilson, and Scott Gardner, I'm going to give Spidey the biggest birthday card a comic fan could. He may not be my favorite character, but I like him a great deal, and he deserves the spotlight in this, his 50th year. Views from the Long Box can be found at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com. New episodes hit every Friday. Views from the Long Box is a Fortress of Baileytude production in association with the DiMonzo Corps of Milan, Italy.
And welcome back, and I hope you enjoyed your break. I know I did. Wow, that came out way dirtier than I really intended that to all be. I had some soda. Getting to have some soda is enjoyable for me, okay? That's all I'm going to explain. Wow, that came out really dirty. Moving on. Let's not tend to linger, shall we? Let's continue with acting. Let's start off with protagonist acting. I thought all the protagonists did really, really well. Most of the cast were protagonists. Again, like I said, they got the band back together. You know, so you had Greg Ayers, you had Lucy Christen, and you had Chris Patton. There are a lot of instances where you can tell that the voice cast was just having fun with this. And again, especially with those three voice actors. And this isn't something to where they're all together and doing this, but you could tell they were probably... I can only imagine sort of the tidbits that Lucy Christian or Chris or Greg would leave for each other. Which, you know, they've said in at panels and stuff that they would do to make the others laugh. But, you know, I think probably the biggest moment is there's a scene where they're in the cave hunting for this treasure. And Corona takes out these dolling rods, I think. Dolling or it's something like that. But, you know, those two rods were like the, like Wiccans use and stuff like that. To, I guess to find stuff. And just, I said fire! Which was like in a completely different voice. And you could tell they were having fun with that. But they did a great job with the role. Really made me believe into the characters from the acting. The acting was just subpar. And the same thing, for that matter, goes with the antagonist acting. All the acting here did a wonderful job. The antagonist made me believe in their sleaziness and their villainous ways. I mean, sometimes the villainous was played for laughs. Sometimes the villainous was, or should I say villainy, was played more serious. Both worked. And like I said, the protagonists, all of them did a great job. Chris Patton did a great job portraying all the emotions of Akudo. You know, because there are a lot of emotions that Akudo goes through in this series. Especially considering all the different misunderstandings that happen in the series. With that, we are going to move on to story. So, first talking point when it comes to story is, again, the main plot and its theme of atheism and anti-religion. And with that being said, again, warning, 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 if you are a person who can't handle talks about sort of anti-religion and stuff like that, you might want to fast forward 5 minutes ahead. And if I'm still talking about religion, fast forward 5 more minutes ahead until you get to a place where I'm not talking about religion or atheism. You have been warned. Now that I've gotten that obligatory warning out of the way, the main plot really revolves around the fact that Akudo Sai is basically predicted to be the Demon King. And there is this very undertonal theme of atheism and anti-religion. I say that because, I mean, the main plot is him being the Demon King and sort of his multiple love interests and how they deal with it, which we will be talking about in a second after we talk. Well, not in a second. We're going to talk about that because that's the next point. But you got my point there. Pun intended, by the way. But there is this underlying theme of, I say atheism because it's not just because it's anti-religion, but sort of the ultimate, or at least what seems to be the ultimate conclusion the anime itself comes up with, is believing in the facts and believing in yourself, which seems more atheistic, I would say. I mean, I guess it's more due to the fact they kind of make the joke it's anti-religion, so it's must be atheist. Because it really comes out, I guess, against all sort of religion. It doesn't pick one religion and say, oh, that religion's bad. You know, I guess more of a better way to explain it is I have to go in deeper. Basically, God in this world is this giant machine that pumps mana into the earth and into people and dictates their lives. And basically, all these religions are basically systems of God, of this giant machine. And the Demon King, along with others, are just actually things created by God to keep people believing in the system, basically. And Akudo Sai is a person, by the way, who, it's not so much that he believes in religions or believes in thanking God, he believes in people. You know, he wants to change the world with his own two hands. He doesn't believe God has a say in what he does. Which is part of the reason he does eventually become the Demon King. You know, for that matter, that's what the Demon King believes. But basically, it's sort of anti-religion in the sense that you have the school, which is a religious school, and to its extent, because again, it's people learning magic so they can become part of the government, part of protecting the system of God. And you have this person that is predicted to be the Demon King. He's not done anything. All that's happened is somebody said he's going to be the Demon King. And so automatically everybody hates him. Everybody wants to try to, you know, fight him or try to kill him. You know, or should I say they mistrust him. You know, anytime he says something, everybody always takes it the wrong way. And for that matter, Akuto Sai just can't win from that. And he's always dealing with discrimination just because somebody said, oh, he's going to be the Demon King in the future. In fact, if anything, what leads him to being the Demon King is people doing stuff because they think he's going to be the Demon King. That leads more to him being Demon King than pretty much, I think, anything else. Even though he does have this unique ability in his body to where, you know, he has a lot of powerful mana, even though he doesn't have great mana control, but he has a lot of powerful mana. It can do things that only a Demon King could do. But it is still a fact where it's because of the fanaticism of the people at the school and in the government and the actions they take against him that lead him more toward being the Demon King than anything else. The other aspect is that Kenga, as it turns out, is... They never say what she is, you know. They kind of hint strong that they're the same person, that she, maybe she just dyed her hair, or she could be a child of her and the Demon King or whatever. Either way, basically, Kenga is the instrument of, I'm blanking on the term now, but, she's basically this person that has this special power. And that she's needed to, you know, basically reset God, and she can time travel and basically everything. And Bushido is a time traveler as well. There's this whole point of the system making people act a certain way, giving the system, should I say, giving people information to, you know, act a certain way. And both Akuto and Kenga both act not to do that. You know, you gotta do this to save it. No, I'm gonna do something different and save the world. I'm gonna do it without anybody dying. You know, that's a sort of common theme. You know, the system tries to create strife, which, again, a parallel of sort of how religion tries a lot of times, not all the time, but especially in certain religions, they try to use fear to, you know, motivate people and make them do things. And you see the same thing here, and that's where the parallels really are. You know, and it leads to this ultimate conclusion that it's not important what you believe in, it's important what you do. That's the ultimate conclusion that I think the anime comes to. And all this leads to this sort of, like I said, underlying theme of sort of anti-religion and sort of atheism to an aspect. At the end of the day, it's a very good theme, you know? I mean, I'm going more into it because it takes a lot to explain, but it's very enjoyable, especially when you sort of see the things that indicate that underlying theme. It's a very enjoyable theme. I think they do it really well. And I think what also helps the theme is the stuff we're going to talk about next couple of points, which is the comedy. You know, the comedy, the romantic angles and everything. It really helped to lighten the mood. Otherwise, you just have this very serious talk. And not that you can't have sort of a serious talk about sort of religion and religion's role and not evil, but, you know, religion's role in, you know, stirring up fear in people. But in this case, you know, this was just a sort of fun talk about that subject. And part of what makes that work is the fact that you were able to lighten the mood with these next two points. Point number one, which is our next talking point, is the romantic angles of the plot. I really like how they handled the romantic angles of the plot. I think there was a lot of chemistry between Junko and Akuto. I think they really did a good job showing that chemistry between them. And, you know, for as tough as Junko acts, she's really a shy girl. And they did a great job of showing how her emotions and her feelings for Akuto grew as the series went on. I thought that was done very good. I love sort of this very light romantic feelings that are between Kenga and Akuto. It's more of this sort of, we are friends and I will do whatever I can to help you and protect you type of thing. Rather is, I'm deeply in love with you. Corona she indicates that she has life feelings, but I don't think you know really what she is because she's always joking. She's always saying, I'm just joking with you. There really is sort of like platonic sort of understanding, I think one might say, between Corona and Akuto. And then, of course, the last is Fujiko. And I just... oh, she makes me laugh. The past three I've mentioned, Kenga, Corona, and Fujiko, all of them make me laugh. In fact, all the comedy in this series make me laugh. But with that being said, you know, with Fujiko, you know, just the whole thing of, you know, I'm doing this for the Demon King, and then he'll make me the ride and whisper sweet demon things in my ears, and it's like, it's that one-sided sort of relationship. I don't even think I should call it a relationship, but it's sort of that one-sided sort of crush to where, you know, Kudo basically does something to where he saves Fujiko, and reveals something from her past that basically proves that her brother was innocent, who had died. And so she's now fallen deeply in love with him. And it's like, oh God, how do I deal with this? And I love the fact, by the way, that they do, he kind of, well, let me say that again. I do like the fact that, you know, Akuto sort of acknowledges, oh my God, I have all these girls. What am I going to do? You know, and he's given serious thought. Again, that goes to Chris Patton's acting. He does a great job of sort of portraying, you know, he cares about all these girls, but, you know, and he takes their feelings seriously. He's very headstrong. You know, he's a very gentlemanly person. So, you know, even if he is thinking perverted things, he's not intending to think perverted things. People just imply that he's thinking perverted things or put him in a situation to where he's seen something perverted and then say he's perverted. Again, going back to that whole aspect, he's been predicted as a Demon King, so people immediately discriminate against him. They put him in the situation and then say, oh, hey, you know, he did this. You know, it's like somebody robbing a bank, finding the Akuto on the street, putting the bag of money with the stolen money in his hand and saying, he robbed the bank, officer. And the officer going, looking at Akuto to just holding a bag of money. And the guy who's dressed in a ski mask, everything in an AK-47, saying, yep, Akuto stole the money. Sir, you're under arrest. I mean, really, that's what it is. So him dealing with that and dealing with the feelings of these four girls, you know, they do a very good job handling of it. And again, it just adds to that comedy. And again, comedy and fan service is the next point. I love the comedy in here. It's funny. I think Section 23 in the English dub itself went a little bit more perverted than the Japanese version really was, but even with that, you know, the Japanese version does have some perverted jokes in it. I mean, the fan service, and which leads into the comedy, it works so well, and again, it helps to lighten the mood very well, and allows for this enjoyment of this series that does talk about how religion is bad. I mean, there's a lot of funny moments from Fujiko trying to tame the demon beasts, them being on the beach, you know, Corona's constant fooling around and, you know, picking on sort of Akuto, trying to put him in perverted situations and like, how does this make you feel? Stop it! And then, of course, Kenga, you know, the fact that, you know, she has to be naked to become invisible. And all the wacky, way-out misunderstandings that leads to. Including the one in, I think it's episode 4, when they're in the meditation chamber. Which, that whole scene is a funny one where Kenga sneaks in, you know, being invisible, of course, which means she's naked. So, Akuto gives her a shirt, and then, a couple minutes later, oh, she has to pee. And there's nowhere for P, and she's pounding, let me out, let me out. I was like, why should you come in here? And you know, the only thing that he has to pee in is this waterproof bag that he's supposed to use if he did. I mean, he was supposed to go in there alone, and Corona and basically Kenga sneak in with him. not with him, you know, but they sneak into it, and it's just a way out wacky situation that makes me laugh so hard. And there's a lot of good comedic moments and a lot of fan service that makes me laugh. You know, it's very enjoyable, and again, it helps lighten the mood. Another thing to talk about with this series that this series has in common with a lot of the good anime that's come out over the past, you know, again, 3 years, that separates 2010, 2011, 2012 with 2005 to 2009 is series pace. Now, I think a lot of the shows from 2005 to 2009 lacked good pace and organic flow. This series had very good pace. Everything flowed organically. The story flowed organically. You never were for a loss for what was going on. And it, again, it helps the series. It makes the story that much better. It makes the story that much enjoyable, knowing what's going on, not being confused by anything. And again, that comes to pace. Nice, steady pace that the story moves along. That's very, very enjoyable. And then our final talking point is the fights and the battles, for that matter. I thought the fight scenes were handled beautifully. Especially towards the end of the series, like I said, where Akuto's flying on Peterhausen and they're doing battle against this flying fortress, which is just an epic win right there. A dragon and a demon master against a flying fortress. Epic! And that fight scene was really awesome. I mean, it's nothing, how should I put this, that, you know, it's not Bruce Lee Enter the Dragon type fight. It's not this detailed, long-ass, drawn-out fights like you see in Dragon Ball Z or stuff like that. I mean, they're short, but they do what they need to do. They're interesting, they're enjoyable, and they're really, really well done, and they never seem out of place. So for that, you know, I find them very, very enjoyable. As we move on to final thoughts, at the end of the day, this is a very good series. It's very enjoyable. If anything, you know, the only things I can see wrong is the music being standard and the animation. Well, I said I like it, and I like a lot of the things they do. Just mean okay. I mean, it's one of those things where this is a good series. But when you compare it to a lot of the stuff that came out during 2010 that was good, it was kind of middle in the pack. It was that thing to where if this had came out a year earlier, it'd be probably one of the best animes of the year. But because it came out when it did, and it came out with so many other great animes that were coming out, like Giant Killings and Big Wind-Up Season 2 and Angel Beats and Da-Ra-Ra-Ra and Hyrule Ran Samurai Girls and Oremo and Star Driver and Hero Man and Cult Academy and why am I listening to every one? I should stop now. You know, it became sort of middle of the pack. I can't fault the series for that. I mean, that is unfortunately something that I think has hindered people from seeing this series. Outside of that, though, it's a very good series, and I highly suggest people watch it. Unless, again, you're somebody who can't sort of handle talking about how religion is bad. But outside of that, I think most people can enjoy it. There are some, and I didn't really go into sort of the time travel aspects of Kenga and Bunshiro. If there's one flaw in the story, it's those, because it's one of those things where sort of the time travel aspect, and sort of, it does get a bit confusing at the end, you know, what really happens. It's not, I mean, it's obvious to what happens. They sort of go back and everything is forgotten. They sort of erase people's memories, but at the same time, it is a bit confusing, so that's really the only flaw I can find with the story. Outside of that, the story is just an enjoyable, you know, romantic comedy harem series with sort of an underlying theme of religion being bad. like I said, it's very enjoyable. I'll definitely watch it again, and I think a lot of people can enjoy it. So, ultimately, I give this series a 3.5 out of 5. And that's it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. If you would like to send me any comments or any email or anything about, you know, this episode or about the show in general or anything, there are several ways you can contact the show. One, you can email us at absolution132@yahoo.com. That's absolution132@yahoo.com. You can also leave a comment on our Facebook page, which you can find by searching Absolution Network on Facebook.com. I don't know why I had to put the .com in there, but, you know, if you have a Facebook account, you can find us on Facebook at Absolution Network. And, of course, you can always leave a comment on the site, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. And, of course, remember to check out all our other sites while you're there. At part of 132 Productions, of course, my site's Comic Book Crazy, which has a lot of comic book podcast stuff, which you can find at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And, of course, Tokyo SOS, which features the Tokyo SOS podcast, a Godzilla podcast. You can find that at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And, of course, check out all the other 132 Productions sites, like Random Red Box Reviews and Flashpoint and others. And, of course, while you're at my sites, remember to check out the sidebar and check out all our friends, which includes people like Michael Bailey's Views from the Long Box and From Crisis to Crisis that he does with his good friend Jeffrey Taylor, Brad Douglas's Spider-Man Crawlspace, Steven Seichler's Major Spoilers podcast, and, of course, Scott Gardner's Two True Freaks, along with many other friends on the sidebar that really are worth checking out. And that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. Next week, we start a whole new themed month. What is that month? Well, since Toonami's rebooted, I thought it's time we finally have a Toonami month! Yes! All of next month, we will be covering series that were on Toonami. And we start this with one of my favorite animes of all time, Outlaw Star. So until next time, my Toonami generation, stay golden.
A cursed samurai. You have succeeded again in eluding my effort. But I am not worried. For one day you will fail.
Clark Nova, don't sleep on it.